Spartans, Joe DeSena here, CEO and founder of Spartan. I'm bringing you Spartan Up podcast this week, like I do every week, where we rip you off the couch. We are your accountability and grit partners. You know what we're going to talk about this week? Joe Rogan.
Like, what is your ultimate goal? Is your ultimate goal numbers in a bank account, or is your ultimate goal to feel good?
Outlive your competition.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, don't you want, I love this term, health span. Right? From the moment you wake, you're alive, to the moment you die, just be healthy.
Right.
You don't want to, like, the last 20 years in the hospital is not a,
That's
not a good one.
Right.
This week, I was on the Joe Rogan Experience, number one podcast in the world. How the hell did that happen?
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Gone Rogue High Protein Chips. Visit Amazon or GoneRogueSnacks.com and use the promo code Spartan25 to get 25% off.
This week, I was on the Joe Rogan Experience, number one podcast in the world. How the hell did that happen? I've been working on this thing for 6 years with my team. I know a bunch of people he knows. I know a bunch of guests he's had on. But for some reason, I just could not get it done. Can't blame Joe, right? He typically does not let people on that have a commercial interest. He wants scientists. He wants doctors. He wants transformation agents, etc. But I think finally, he came around. He texted me.
My phone is ringing.
What's up, big man? I did not. I'm going to look right now. Did he just send one? Hold on one second. We got to Joe Rogan.
It's awesome. It's only been 5 years, 6 years, 7 years.
Been trying to meet him. Trying to meet you. 7 years. Finally, he came around. He texted me and he said, hey, you know what? Joe's got a story to share. And I was in. He gave me a date on the calendar. I was going to say, gee, Joe, I don't know if I could make it or not because of the coronavirus. I don't know if I can fly. I bit my tongue because of what we say here on this podcast. And I thought to myself, you know what? No excuses. I'm going to get to the West Coast. I'm going to get to this clandestine secret location that nobody could know about. And I'm going to meet him when I told him, even if I have to drive across the country and I have to quarantine in like 20 states. When we ask you, who do you want on our show? Hands down, without a shadow of, it's Rogan. Everybody wanted Rogan on the show. So I took the last 10, 15 minutes of being on Joe's show to interview him.
So stay tuned. At the end of today's episode, we're going to play that interview, Joe asking Joe Rogan questions for you.
So check this out. I get there and I think, you know what? I know a bunch of guests that have been on his show. I got to go meet one of our mutual friends so I could learn, how does this guy interview? How should I handle this? I'm a little nervous, to be honest with you. And so it turns out C.T. Fletcher is on the West Coast. So I go, I don't know how many hours to get to C.T. Fletcher's place. I bring my kettlebell, bang on the metal door of his gym. And he opens the door. He doesn't even recognize me. He's like, who the fuck are you? And I'm like, Joe, it's C.T., it's Joe. It's Spartan Joe. And finally, he lets me in. Picks up my kettlebell like it was a tennis ball, throws it, and he's like, you don't fucking come to my gym with weights. We got weights here, buddy. Breaks the kettlebell. That's another story. Brings me inside and puts me through, I don't know, 2-3 hour grueling workout. All I wanted was some advice on how to be interviewed by Joe Rogan. What I got was an ass kicking. I'll tell you about the workout. I videotaped the workout. The workout was... He does this thing called random selection, and he sticks the pin in any weight he wants with every 10 reps. I got to tell you, it was hard, right? And then I talked to him about it. He goes, yeah, Joe, when I was training to be world champion, he goes, I would knock out 100 reps straight with the entire stack. My partner would knock out 100 reps, go back to me, back to him, back to me, back to him. We do 300 reps as a warm-up before I did my tricep workout. So stop complaining. I was kind of embarrassed, right? But I don't lift weights, to be honest with you. We're big on body weights, right? That's not our thing. I did the Compton Curls competition with him. He nearly killed me, made me push a sled, made me flip a tire. I think the tire was like I'm not allowed to curse. I think the tire was like 3,000 pounds. I don't know what that tire was, but nearly killed me. Anyway, gives me the advice. I'm heading out, grab my kettlebell. He broke the kettlebell on my way in. Turns out there's a welding shop across the street. He walks me over to the welding shop. Thank God. I think his name was Ernie. Ernie welded my kettlebell back together because Joe Rogan said, if you're coming here, you better bring that kettlebell. Apparently, he's like a kettlebell aficionado. So I weld the kettlebell, jump in a car, 3-4 hours, get to this secret location. I got to get blindfolded. I get in there, and he's going to COVID test me, right? He's got to test me. Rogan's got his team of people. They're not doing the regular Q-tip test, right? He's got a knife. They're going to test my blood for antibodies, and I don't know what the hell they did, but turns out I passed the test. And then he just turns to me and he says, let's go.
Hello, Joe. How are you? We're rolling. Hello, What's going on, man? All right. Nice to meet you.
Thanks for having me.
But before we got going, I gave him a gift. One of our Spartans in the UK, a guy named Dan, heard that I was going on the Rogan podcast and sent me this wonderful gift with an old knife, a little Atlas ball, barbed wire, a solid piece of oak, a chain, gave it to Rogan. We got a picture of it. We'll post it here. And Rogan sat me down in the seat and boom, we were going. I sat there. I thought maybe I was talking to him for 30 minutes. Turns out I was there for almost 3 hours. So there's some kind of time warp that happens in his studio. And, you know, I had a whole plan of the things I wanted to talk about, the things I wanted to share to his community. But somehow, and it's good, we got stuck on getting people healthy, which is the thing I'm passionate about, right? Talking about the people I bring to this farm and beat the shit out of and help them lose hundreds of pounds, right? That I get hiking, the kids that come and are part of the Spartan experience on this farm. So we dove in, we covered a bunch of organized crime in the neighborhood. We covered all kinds of stuff, food marketing we covered, right? The thing that I'm just crazy about, and I'm sure you're crazy about it, we covered freedom. You know, Joe's take was, hey, Joe, you know, we want freedom in this country. That's what America stands for. And I'm like, I don't know. Should we really worry about freedom when our obesity rates and diabetic rates and lifestyle diseases look the way they do in this country? Maybe we should ban the Doritos. Maybe we should ban the alcohol. Maybe we should ban some of this shit that people can't seem to avoid. So I don't know. I don't know. I think it might be something where we'd be willing to give up some freedom in order to get the country a lot healthier. You know, one of the things I said, and I think you'd believe this, is we don't have a chance. We don't have a chance against big food companies. They've got the best scientists, the best psychologists. They've got the best marketing. So if you're a kid and you've been indoctrinated to believe that Cheerios are good for you, that Doritos are a good snack, that you should eat more pretzels with lots of salt, that you should be chugging gallons of sugary drinks, you don't have a chance against these companies. And no one else seems to care. No one else is jumping up and down like we are at Spartan. So I get the whole freedom thing, but I don't know. If it were me, I'd put a heavy-duty tax like they did with cigarettes on any kind of food that is not moving the ball forward for you in your life. Like if it's got sugar and garbage and it's chemical and it's wrapped, throw a giant tax on it. If somebody really wants those Doritos, they should pay 2 or 3 times the price for them. And then use that money to help subsidize the healthy foods, especially in the tough neighborhoods where they don't have access to healthy foods, because that's one of the big arguments. So I'd love to hear from you. I'd love for you to comment on this one, right? Would you give up some freedom around poison in this country in order to get this country healthy? Because when you look at COVID, it exposed our country's weakness. By the way, people can't even qualify to join the military anymore. They're so out of shape. Like, we got a problem here. Like, the emperor has no clothes. Has anybody noticed that this country's fallen apart from the inside out? That's cool that we got a bunch of rockets and missiles and cool bullets and a great military. But like, if everybody, like, look, I love police officers. I love fire department. I love all our uniformed services, but like, we got to get everybody fit. We got to get everybody fit because if you're fit, and this is one of the things Joe and I talk about, if you're fit, you're happier. You're nicer to be around. Everybody gets along better. We probably wouldn't have all this shit going on in the country if everybody was a little healthier. So I don't know. The other thing about Joe that's interesting is we got a bunch of shared guests that we've had on our podcast, right? Ben Greedfield, check him out. You can check him out on Joe's podcast. Check him out on Spartan Up. But Ben is one of these guys that believes in like biohacking. I'm not a big biohacking guy. I'm more of a Flintstone. But he runs experiments on himself. He's trying to figure out, like, is there a simpler way? Is there a pill he can take? Can he inject stem cells in his body and automatically be healthier? He also does the work. He comes out and does a bunch of Spartan races. He's a super fit guy, but he definitely pushes limits on biohacking.
Your body is a battery, and you need to keep it. You need to keep it charged. You need to keep that battery charged. So the top three things would be A, nature, specifically getting in touch with the planet Earth and getting sunlight. Okay, that's number one. Every single day, get outside barefoot and get sunshine on your skin. Number two is hormesis, specifically through heat and cold every day, right? So grounding, earthing, light, heat, and cold. And then finally, hydration, but specifically pay attention to the type of water you're drinking, clean, filtered water, and get a lot of minerals in your body. Everything I just described is basically treating your body like a battery, because everything from the earthing to the photons from the light to the heat and the cold moving electrons through your body to the water to the minerals all charges up your human battery. And if you do no other biohacks or expensive things or anything else, assuming you're moving throughout the day and you're eating a diet that our ancestors would have recognized, you're going to feel pretty good.
I love it. I feel like Tesla already.
Rich Roll, plant-based athlete, superstar. I mean, this guy is healthy as can be, and I think we could learn something from him. He's got a great podcast, and he just believes in eating plants. And I know, you know, I know there's a bunch of folks out there that just want to eat meat. I get it, but maybe you could eat a little less. Listen to Rich Roll.
Plant-based is much more mainstream, even now more so than it was even like 2 years ago. So we're starting to see some mainstream interest in that, and I think it. It's also a function of people being more interested in longevity than being specifically performance focused.
We have a farm in Vermont, and so we tried doing local farming and growing some things and getting everything right from our own farm. But it turns out farming's hard.
Yeah.
And so you could see how factory farming came about.
Mm-hmm. I think what's really interesting is we're seeing this swing back towards local organic farming and interest in locavore nutrition, as well as all these innovations and technology with these plant-based analogs, including like the lab-grown meat and all of that. Like, it's super interesting to watch that.
Who else? Huberman, neuroscientist, Stanford University, guy's awesome. Gave me all kinds of tips. You should check this out on sleep, on how to really get the mind working. He's got breakthrough stuff that they're learning in the lab over in Stanford University.
The behavioral steps that can really enhance depth and quality of sleep. It's going to sound so simple, but I'm guessing that most people are not doing this. There is abundant scientific literature in humans that getting exposure to bright light first thing in the morning, doesn't have to be sunrise, but usually before about 9 a.m. and that bright light has to arrive to the eyes. Doing that for about 2 to 10 minutes each day is setting up two very important features of your body that will prepare you for better sleep. The first thing is it times your morning cortisol pulse. We always hear about cortisol is bad, but a morning cortisol pulse is good. It's going to prime you for energy and activity during the day. It's also going to set a timer, literally a biological timer, on the release of this pro-sleepy hormone called melatonin, which is secreted from our pineal, to come on about 16 hours later. So if you wake up and you're looking at your phone, or you're just using artificial lights in your home, you are not getting sufficient what's called photon capture, which is just light energy, to the eyes to then signal to the brain, to then signal to the rest of the body about when you need to be asleep. So get morning sunlight. And even if you're in New England in the depths of winter and there's cloud cover, there's still a lot of photons coming through. I have this dorky like app on my phone. I have nothing to do with the app, but no formal relationship. I think it's called Lux or Light Meter, I think it's called. And I'll go measure the brightness. There's so much, there's like 50,000 lux coming through on a dark, cloudy day. And then you look at the lamp in your kitchen and it's like 400 lux. It's nothing. And so you really need to get some photons early in the day. You don't need it to be direct you know, beaming your eyes with light. But ideally, you take your sunglasses off, go outside for a little bit. If you want to do something else or have a conversation, that's fine. But get that morning sunlight. The other thing that's really important for getting into
let me stop you for a second. Get that morning sunlight. Like, I wake up at 4:20 in the morning. If I don't get that sunlight, hypothetically, until 8 a.m., that hasn't worked then, because that my 16-hour clock starts then. That's what you're saying?
Yeah, you sound like a morning person. It's okay to use artificial lights if you want to be awake at that time. And then when the sun does come out, go outside and get some natural light. Then, in addition to that, you really want to avoid bright lights of all colors, not just blue, from the hours of about 11 p.m. to 4 a.m.
We've got C.T. Fletcher, right? This guy is the scientist of heavyweights. He's an animal. I know firsthand. Remember, I went to see him right before I went to Rogan.
You and I did this partnership. We created Don't Break. Why'd you do that? What was exciting about that?
Don't Break. When they approached me about Don't Break, I thought that nothing ever in life has fit my personality, my way of thinking, my mentality better than Don't Break. Because I laid in my hospital bed, Joe. I laid in that bed every day and night for months. And it was kind of hard. And the one thing that I told myself over and over was, don't break, old man. Don't you break. Because people are looking to you to be strong. They're looking, somebody else out there is going through something, and they're looking to your example not to break. And I'd be damned. I'd be damned, Joe. I'd be damned if I break.
Just got me all choked up. I got chills. It's pretty powerful. Thanks for doing this. If you had, CT, if you had, you know, 2-3 sentences for those people out there to just get up and get after it, what would you tell them?
I would tell them that you don't realize how precious life is. Every second, every minute is so precious, and it's so worth living. And that's for somebody who's seen the others. It's worth living. Don't waste it. Don't waste 1 second of it. A millionaire can't buy 1 second of life. And you have it. You have it. So take advantage of it.
Wim Hof, the Iceman. This guy sleeps in ice. He's a lunatic. He makes my cold showers look like Disneyland. Check him out. Teaches you how to breathe, teaches you how to get in cold water.
We'll be right back to this interview, but I want to talk to you a little bit about Gone Rogue chips. These are not your ordinary chips. They have less than 2 carbs per ounce. They're made for people like you. They're made from real, fresh chicken, never from frozen, and it's baked to a crunch and seasoned with spices. They have flavors like chicken bacon, barbecue chicken, buffalo-style chicken, teriyaki chicken, and the flavors don't come from bottled smoke flavor. The chicken is smoked in a smokehouse with a blend of hickory hardwoods for an authentic smoky taste. So the Gone Rogue chips, they're light, they're fast. They're great for before or after your workout. They're easy. They're super portable. It's an easy way to get your fix with a crunch of a chip and the protein of a jerky. Visit Amazon or GoneRogueSnacks.com and use the promo code Spartan25 to get 25% off.
Wim Hof, the Iceman.
So big things. Cold showers.
Cold showers.
Breathing.
And breathing. And believing.
And get outside.
Believing that you are the master over yourself. That is not just abstract believing. It's no religion. It's science. Got that?
Got it.
Mindset, breathing, cold shower.
And outside?
And very, very rapidly, like in 1 week or 10 days or something,
if you take cold showers and you've never been in the cold and all that, then first you go 30 seconds a cold shower finish, then you increase it to 1 minute, and then at a certain moment, the connection between the brain and the body, the vascular system, is there. It's when you say, hey, I'm going to take a cold shower, then the cold body temperature will be maintained because you are closing the veins by your mind. And then when you go outside, the functionality of you being in the cold water is being maintained. Thus, you feel, hey, I can do this. Yes, that's our natural condition. So it takes about 10 days.
What have I missed?
Being Spartan is the right thing to do. You know, we are much alike. I've done all these things to get actually to the essence of my soul. Hey, that's, oh, where is that? No, it really is the gate to the soul, to all the faculties of your brain operating at your will. Then you understand the purpose of life and the life force itself. That's spirituality. And it takes mud, and it takes cold, and it takes heat. It takes challenge. Challenge yourself, and you find out you are the best inside.
You got Jesse Itzler, my buddy, who lived, he lived with monks. He lived with a Navy SEAL.
Let's start with this thing. You write down on your wrist how many days you have left to live based on the average human, the average American, what?
I do. I think that people have a really weird relationship with time.
Yeah.
It's something that's, their relationship with time is neglected.
Yeah.
So I said to myself, you know, I'm 48 years old, and the average American lives to be 78. I'm not saying you or I are average, sure, but there's accidents and things to factor in. So if I'm average, I got 30 years left.
Do you put the number of years or number of days?
No, I put 10,000. I put 10,752 days, and then yep, tomorrow will be 10,751. I want to make sure that I'm not flipping the calendar, you know, and all of a sudden I'm 70, and I want to make sure that that I appreciate
each
every
day,
single one of those days, and I do something in those days that I want to do. So that's my little reminder.
You know, him and I share a great story because I had a Kung Fu master living with us when my kids were very young. So I get that idea of bringing in an expert and actually moving them in to your house. And then obviously Gary Vee. Gary Vee just gets after it when it comes to business and social media. The guy is a ferocious animal. You listen to listen to Gary Vee on both our podcasts.
The number one thing that I'm attracted to in my mother is that she doesn't complain. Just is incapable of complaining. And at some level, I took that DNA. And out of all the things that I am, for me to humble brag, I would say the fact that I don't complain, every time there's a problem with anything, anything here, I take full responsibility. I love people that don't complain. I love it.
All right. So clearly, Rogan and I are completely aligned. We have some of the same guests on both shows. A lot of the stuff we talked about, we nodded and agreed on. And, you know, when we look back over the last 4 or 5 years of Spartan Up, what we see is when we ask our audience, when we ask you, who do you want on our show? Hands down, without a shadow of it's Rogan. Everybody wanted Rogan on the show. So I took the last 10, 15 minutes of being on Joe's show to interview him. So check out this clip. Maybe you'll learn a little more about Joe here.
So what do we do with the Doritos? And
let them have it. You have Doritos. You
can't
have
put,
ice cream.
Can't put a sugar tax or a...
Nope. You should educate people. Look, I don't eat Doritos.
Yep.
Well, how come other people do? I'll have them occasionally. I have them occasionally. But I don't eat them every day. If I did, I'd be fat. It's real simple. But we don't say this, you know? Like, and the Doritos.
So you think it's a discussion problem?
Sure.
Yeah.
Look, how much time do we spend talking about certain issues that we have, whatever those issues are, and how little time do we spend? How little time does our own government spend talking to us about our diet?
Right.
Talking to us about, like, literally one of the most important things.
Even
to maintain,
doctors don't talk about our diet.
They don't know anything about it.
Right.
The amount of time that the average physician spends in medical school studying nutrition is minuscule. It's tiny. Unless that person's actually studied, unless their actual education is in nutrition, there's very little studying of it. If you're a doctor that's a general practitioner, if you're a doctor that's an orthopedic surgeon, how much time, unless you're independently studying it, how much time in medical school do they spend studying nutrition? Very little.
Which is crazy because that's the root cause of most of these diseases.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. But we fix problems. We don't find the source of the problems and solve them. Yeah. It's. But some people do. So for those some people, you know, you can learn from those some people, and there's a ton of them out there. And
but those inner cities might not be getting that information.
They're not. They're not.
So
they're
how, not do, getting, how do
not
we
Not only
sell?
That, they do have cheap food in the form of fast food, and it's everywhere, and it also provides jobs for people that live there.
So yeah. Do you subsidize that?
Man, I don't know, man. That's a good idea. It's a real good question. The problem is people are addicted to those foods too, so you'd have to get them off of that. When you see someone who's obese – almost always they're addicted to some sort of terrible food. Well, almost always.
I know you love freedom, and I love freedom. That's why we both live in this country, but it's not a fair fight. I'm not a conspiracy guy, but like I was on Wall Street, and if you're a Burger King, you're one of these big public companies that's making food that's not so healthy. Like you got scientists, you got Madison Avenue, advertisers. You figured out a way to get into our psyche where you can't live without that thing.
Yeah.
Right? So that's not a fair fight.
Yeah, and they're in there and they're not getting out, right? But they used to be able to advertise for cigarettes. They can't do that anymore. They stopped that. It's interesting because you could still advertise for like Jack in the Box, but you can't advertise for cigarettes. But obesity kills as many people as almost anything.
So that's what I'm saying. Would you cross the line on, like, were you annoyed that you can't advertise for cigarettes? Is that taking away a freedom?
It's a good question. It's a discussion. The problem with those ads is a lot of them were, at least initially, very deceptive. You know, they made it look like
Marlboro Man.
Yeah, Marlboro Man.
I wanted to be Marlboro, right?
The guy died of cancer, by the way.
So, I mean, there's no ads where you see these shitty foods with obese people getting sick.
No.
Right? They're making you feel good.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, for every good ad, you would have to have a bad ad. Like you'd have
like
to have
that.
An ad.
I like that.
Like, so like for every good ad for Burger King had, you could hire like a company that would make a creative, very compelling ad showing fat people having heart attacks and literally like
eating shit food, or even a motivating one to do something healthy.
Yeah, right? That'd be better.
Right?
The best motivation is always positive, right? But sometimes not for some people. Particularly for people that are addicted, sometimes the wake-up call is death's door. You get to death's door, you have that heart attack, and you're like, oh my God, I got to clean up my life. Yeah.
What's a typical day look like for you from a health and wellness standpoint? Like,
well, I'm lucky that I enjoy doing things, physical
healthy things.
Yeah, and I...
Because your background.
Yeah. Right. So because I have this long history of exercise, it's like it's just a normal part of my day.
Right.
And if I don't do it, I don't think right. Like if I don't do it, I'm not calm. It fucks up everything else. So it'll fuck up podcasts for me. Yeah. When I was doing stand-up before COVID, it would fuck up stand-up. Like, you can't be in a bad mood. Like, you can't. And for me, the best solution to a bad mood is hard workouts.
Yeah.
Hard workouts cure it all, man. A heavy bag, smoke a joint, hit that heavy bag, play some Hendrix, just whack the shit out of that heavy bag. And then after it's over, man, I feel great. I love everybody.
Doesn't it – smoking the joint doesn't slow you down? It gives you energy.
No, it just makes me
calmer.
Reflective, makes me think more, makes me paranoid, which makes me more compassionate. There's a lot of weird stuff about pot, and one of the things that people don't like is like, oh my God, I just feel paranoid. Like, I think that's hyper-aware. That's what it is. Like, because really, you should kind of be more paranoid than you really are. I mean, we're these water balloons of flesh with these fucking breakable sticks that keep the structure together.
I like wandering around,
driving 60 miles an hour in these metal boxes with rubber tires over this artificial road that we've created and covered the earth with. We're fucking weird, man.
Pretty complacent when you describe it that way.
And we're in space. And we're on this ball that's spinning 1,000 miles an hour, hurling towards infinity.
A fire burning every day, the sun. Right?
And we're not going to be here for very long. You know, that's the other thing. You have a short amount of time here. And you're trying to navigate this time the best you can, trying to be nice and be a good friend and be a good neighbor and be a good husband and a father and all those good things and a big good wife and just a nice coworker, and you're trying to just do your best. And it's complicated, and you're interacting with all these different people with all sorts of different issues and problems and needs and wants and desires and egos, and there's a lot going on, man. And the more that you can mitigate your own stress levels, the more that you can calm the demons inside you, the better you're going to interact with people, the better they're going to feel about their interactions with you, the better they're going to interact with other people. There's a ripple effect, and it makes the whole world better. Like, if you're a better person, if you do your best and you get better at it and you keep doing your best, you keep getting better at it, like all things in life, you do better at creating a healthy environment for all the people around you too.
When you say it that way, it's like if everybody in America exercised, yeah, even 20 minutes a day, 30, right?
It'd be a better world.
It'd be a better world.
100%.
Right?
100%.
Everybody get along a little better.
Yeah, I don't think there's any denying that. I mean, for some people, it wouldn't work. Oh, yeah, well, my dad worked out 20 minutes a day. He was still a dick. That's right. The outlier. Right. But if you looked at the mean, if you looked at overall, like if you've got 330 million people or whatever we've got in this country, yeah, and all of them worked out 20 minutes a day, and then you looked at like what the results were 2-3 years down the road, I would imagine you would have less aggressive behavior. You would have probably less violent crime. You'd probably have less arguments. People could be more peaceful about things. You'd probably have people that were healthier. They'd have less visits to the doctor. They'd have less medical problems. I bet there would be overall a host of benefits that we would achieve nationwide if we could convince people. And I'm not talking about taking a brutal CrossFit class or going to jiu-jitsu and getting strangled every day. I'm talking about going on a hike and doing some push-ups and sit-ups, some bodyweight squats.
Very basic.
Basic stuff.
Yeah.
Basic stuff.
I've met enough, as you have, I've met enough, we'll call them killers from martial arts, where they're very humble. They're, yeah, very nice. And me not coming from that background, I'm shocked, right? Because I'm expecting a pit bull, but I'm getting a golden retriever.
Yeah.
And I think it's because they work out every day and they've been humbled and they do hard work.
Yep.
And so it takes the edge off.
Yep. It's also they don't have a need to prove themselves.
Yeah.
They know what they can do, and they're not trying to puff their chest out and like intimidate everyone around them. They're friendly. Yeah. They're like jiu-jitsu is a perfect example of that, because jiu-jitsu, there's only one way to excel at jiu-jitsu. You have to spar. So you can't pretend. You have to be in there getting strangled or strangling people every day.
You become humble.
You get humble. Right. It happens. Right. I mean, I don't know how many times I've tapped out, but it's a lot. It's thousands.
And you got to make that decision, yeah, at that moment.
It's going to happen. Especially, right, look, if you want to get a black belt, you start as a white belt. That means, right, you're going to get f***ed up. I mean, there's just no way around it. Right. But there's great lessons in learning. There's like you start, like you get in your blue belt, you're like, oh, I'm getting really good at this. And then you roll with some purple belt, smashes you, and you're like, terrible. And then you get your purple belt, you're like, I'm doing pretty good. And some brown belt and squashes you, you're like, like there's, you know, it's just like you try to.
You're always being
leveled.
Right. Yeah. I like
and
that.
And then there's always room to grow and learn. You don't want to be the master, you want to be the guy who's seeking to improve. Because there is no real – I mean, there are masters. There's guys that are at such a high level that unless they run into another master, they're gonna do the squashing. But then they've trained with those other masters. They train with each other all the time. And, you know, it's beautiful to watch, you know, like really high-level guys tap each other out. And you realize, like, this never ends. This never ends.
Never ends.
Yeah. Helsin Gracie had a very famous description of jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is like, I do this to you. You respond. I respond to your response. That goes on forever. Forever. That's jiu-jitsu.
I like that.
I attack, yeah, you defend. I attack, you defend.
Forever.
Forever. Like that's jiu-jitsu.
I like that.
Yeah. So
given that, you're president again. couldn't we do what Israel does? Couldn't we have 1 year? It doesn't have to be military.
It's not a bad idea.
Right?
Yeah.
One year. Just
mandatory.
Kick everybody for 1 year.
It's not a bad idea. The problem with that is, again, the freedom thing. You want people to be able to do whatever they want. But you also get a lot of service out of your country, right? You get a lot. There's a lot that we all benefit from having a fire department and a military and clean streets and sanitation and all the different – the fire department takes care of everybody's fire, right? The police, you call 911. Theoretically, they show up to help you. That's something we all pay for. This is something that brings us together as a society. And what separates Israel, I think, first of all, Israel is surrounded by people that they're in conflict with, so they feel like they have to have that. But the fact that they have this mandatory military service, they're very proud people. And there's a lot of patriotism when it comes to Israel. Some would say that's bad. Some people would say that's bad. Some people would say that's good. I think there's real benefit to some form of service. I don't know if it has to be military service. I don't know what it has to be.
I like the bonding that probably occurs. Same thing with our events. But every culture has had a rite of passage. We need it.
Yes. I think human beings do need a rite of passage. Right. I think that is important. And, you know, these traditional cultures that have had these rites of passage, that's to signify that someone is coming of age. This is an adult now. You've gone through this process, and this is like a belt ceremony.
Right.
You know, like you get your black belt, man, they tie that around your waist. Like that is a moment that you'll never forget.
You graduated.
Yeah, you graduated. You made it. And I think as an adult, like sometimes people have to know, I am an adult now. I'm held to a different standard. I need to hold myself to a different standard. I can't just be a ne'er-do-well and skip my way through this life and live off of unemployment and people over and scam my way through life. No, I want to be noble. I want to be respectable. I want to be someone who I respect.
A good citizen.
Yeah. You want to respect yourself. You want to appreciate yourself, you know? And I think that it's hard to do that. It's easy to do nothing. But it's hard to do nothing, because if you do nothing, you're going to live a hard life. It's going to be a sucky life. You don't realize it, like, but everybody pays. You pay no matter what. Either you pay now
or
you pay with regret. You pay with a lack of success. You pay with a sloppy body and a weak mind that falls apart at any challenge. Joe, thank you, man. It was a pleasure.
You're awesome.
I enjoyed it.
I really did.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Goodbye, everybody.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. That was awesome. Next week, we're coming back at you with some more grit and resilience. If you heard about us from the Rogan Show, do me a favor and comment. Tell us how we're doing. I mean, we're inches away from being as big as Rogan, and we just need to hear from you on how to push us over the edge. See you next week.